Thank you, Scott. Welcome back, everybody. Congratulations, Dr. Waller and Dr. Williams. You've served Whitworth well, and you will serve Whitworth well. Welcome to all of you who are new students, freshman students, transfer students. We commonly think of you transfer students as students who have upgraded, but maybe not. Hope you feel that way by the end of the year. But we're thrilled to have all of you here and all of you who have returned. It is great to see you on campus. Again, we have some guests here today. You're welcome in our midst. We're delighted to have you here. Well, I have chosen to speak on a subject today that may be rather prosaic, but what the heck. We are a university. Now we are a university. Actually, the word university comes from the Latin universitas magistrorum et scholarium, or a community of scholars and teachers. Officially, the teachers and scholars would be the folks down here with the robes. But in the best communities, teaching and learning cut across groups and categories. All members of the community learn from one another. This morning, I'm going to try to make some kind of statement about our unusual community at Whitworth University. I am not an expert on community, although I tried to act like one last August when I spoke on the subject at the faculty retreats for both Wheaton College and Whitworth. My main point was this. If you're going to talk about community on campus, August is the best time. Nobody is around, and you haven't had time to start annoying each other. I would like to comment on three aspects of community life at Whitworth: rules, responsibility, and respect. I didn't alliterate these characteristics on purpose, although I can see where you might think that someone coming from a family of Bonnie, Bill, Ben, Brenna, and Bailey is into alliteration, but that's not true. My motto is always avoid alliteration. Haha, get it? So, I fear that will be my final applause. Rules. A lot of this speech is about rules, and for about a million reasons, I am certain I will regret that a lot of this speech is about rules. Rules are necessary and good. We cannot live without them. Whether we're talking about the laws of nature or the laws of a community, we suffer when we disobey the rules. However, rules are not as smart as values. For that reason, the most effective organizations and the most satisfying communities are driven by shared values, not by rules. Now, all of you students know we have the big three, and we won't be good sports if you break any of them. But the reason we have fewer rules than most Christian schools is because we want you to become wise decision makers, discerning, not just good rule followers. The reason that is so important in almost every area of life is that good judgment and faithfulness to our values will lead to better decisions than rules. For example, Daniel got tossed into a lion's den because King Darius got suckered into substituting a rule for a value. The value was to honor the king. Respecting that value would have been enough. But a rule was implemented that said Darius would be a god for 30 days. And another rule said that if you're going to pray, you had to pray to Darius or you were headed for the lion's den. Certainly Daniel respected the king, but when he prayed to the true God, a rule kicked in and handcuffed the king's response. He had to punish his beloved servant Daniel. And Darius knew immediately that good judgment would have outperformed the rules. Most rules find their origin in a value, often an abused value. Last summer, I spoke with a man who told me his company's policy handbook is, and I quote, "a history of our company's screw-ups. Behind every policy and rule, I was able to trace disasters big and small. Rather than following up these disasters with a training program to improve our decision-making, we followed up with a policy that made the decision for us. Now policies are more responsible for running the business than people." Again, we need rules, but they should never become more important than our values. This past August, I read a book on the formation of the United States Constitution entitled The Summer of 1787 by David Stewart. I loved the book. The Constitutional Convention was prompted by the recognition that this fledgling country needed stronger rules, that the Articles of Confederation just didn't cut it. The Union could not survive without rules and laws. But what became crystal clear as I read was that the grand battles in Philadelphia were over the values out of which the rules were written. Rules simply codify our values. But the fundamental shortcoming of rules is that they frame the boundaries of our values rather than expose the heart of our values. And that poses a few problems. Boundaries, by definition, define a territory. That's what boundaries do. But when a community is defined by its boundaries or rules rather than by the heart those rules protect, its identity becomes who it is not rather than who it is. For example, how do we think of the Amish community? Many of us by their rules: nonviolence, no electricity, horses and buggies. But after last year's horrifying murder of five little girls studying, we saw the heart of their values, not their rules. Before they had lowered five handcrafted wooden caskets into the ground, they began the difficult work of forgiving the murderer and starting to fund an aid to his widow and three children. The world that knew the Amish only by their rules was shocked by their heart. A heart that revealed them to be more about forgiveness than about candles and horses and buggies. Another unintended consequence of rules occurs when they deny access to the values they are supposed to represent. Last winter, Bonnie and I attended a Princeton Seminary board meeting at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Pasadena, California. That it was at the Ritz-Carlton is why you know it wasn't a Whitworth board meeting. Late one evening, our friends wanted Bonnie to play the lobby piano for them. We called the hotel security to get it unlocked. They explained that earlier in the month, someone had abused the piano, so now it was locked in the evenings. Quite politely, I reminded them that the motto of the Ritz-Carlton is, quote, "Ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen." They agreed. I then asked them, just slightly less politely, if we looked like ladies and gentlemen. They agreed that we did, especially Bonnie. But they said they had no choice. The rules are the rules. I assume this new rule had been implemented as an expression of their values. They wanted to protect ladies and gentlemen from hearing some Philistine banging on the piano in the middle of the night. But ironically, the rule ended up blocking ladies and gentlemen from serving ladies and gentlemen. Finally, after a full hour, the manager's manager recognized the heart of their values was being imprisoned by a rule meant to honor that value. So good judgment conquered the rule, and she unlocked the piano, at which point I just abused the heck out of that piano. No, I did not. So, no, I did not. You're clapping for the wrong things. Rules eliminate any hierarchy of values. A rule is a rule. Indiana University basketball coach Kelvin Sampson was asked what possessed him and his staff while at Oklahoma University to think it was okay to make more than 500 phone calls that violated NCAA rules. He was reported to have said, quote, "The other coaches and I sat down and we prioritized the rules." Huh? You don't get to do that with rules. You obey them all. A final reason that a value-driven community will be more satisfying than a rule-driven community is because rules set the bar too low. This is especially true in Christian communities. Christ-like values always set higher standards than rules. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus pays high tribute to the law. "Do not think I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come to fulfill them." But he goes on to describe a new kingdom that is driven by the values behind those laws. The law says, "Do not murder," but Jesus says, "Do not hate." The law says, "Do not commit adultery," but Jesus says, "Do not lust." When Whitworth really lives by the heart of its shared values, we will honor God and serve each other far beyond where any rule can take us. I have one more thing to say about rules. I recognize that sometimes unwritten rules can be as exacting and as intractable as the written ones. I am also aware that when those of us in authority make value-based judgment, our decisions become the functional equivalent of rules. but in a community that nourishes mutual responsibility and respect. Unwritten rules and authoritative judgments should gravitate over time toward the highest values of that community. And that leads to the area of responsibility. The survival of value-driven communities rests on the extent to which its members act responsibly and take responsibility for their actions. Whitworth might not have as many rules as some schools, but we have enough. When you are presented with the rules of this community, it means in these areas we have taken responsibility for determining the behavior the rules enforce. But when you are presented with the values of this community, you are responsible for determining the behaviors the values represent. If you are reckless with that freedom, it hurts the community and it hurts you, and eventually that recklessness leads to a rule. I used to do communication training for the internal audit department of a huge conglomerate in Chicago. In most organizations, internal auditors are treated slightly better than lepers, but these were good people who simply wanted to make sure the conglomerate's companies were abiding by the rules. I learned one thing from these folks I will never forget. You School of Global Commerce and Management people, pay attention. In their audits, they found that trust is a necessary ingredient of both success and fraud. Most people respond to being trusted by giving their best work, but a few people abuse the trust. I think in that same respect, a community built on trust rather than on rules allows for greater levels of both good judgment and bad judgment. Most people will accept the responsibility of good decision-making and strengthen the community. Some people will abuse the freedom, forcing the values to be replaced by rules. Finally, if there is a characteristic without which Whitworth cannot be Whitworth, if there is, for those of you into Latin, a sine qua non of this community, it is respect. The faculty and staff of Whitworth University have joined a very diverse group. We have joined those who stand at the cross of Christ. We stand with the daughters of Jerusalem, with a Roman centurion, with a dying thief, with John the disciple, with the first century church, with the 16th century church, with the Church of East Africa, with the Orthodox Church, with the Church of Rome, with the Church of Latin America, with Mary Magdalene, with an African cross-bearer named Simon, with Mary, the very mother of Christ. We join this diverse group and proclaim with the Roman centurion, truly, this is the Son of God. We have found that proclamation so powerful, so life-changing, and so redemptive that we have made that our only rule of faith and our principal rule of membership in this community. As a faculty and staff, we do not have specific doctrinal rules for membership. We do not have specific behavioral rules for membership. We do not sign a faith statement. Rather, in all of our diversity, we make a faith statement. Truly, Jesus Christ is the Son of God. We join in community, believing that the unifying power of the cross is greater than all the ideas that divide us and all the characteristics that differentiate us. That belief also gives enormous value to our students who do not call themselves Christians. We look to them to provide understanding and leadership. When we walk with those who find true north in a different direction, we will explore and understand territory closed off to Christians who surround themselves only with those of like mind. So here we are, a Christian community that gives freedom to its members to hold very different views on communion, war, politics, worship, homosexuality, baptism, abortion, alcohol, gifts, miracles, and the list goes on. If we do not respect that freedom, and more importantly, if we do not respect each other, we will end in fight or flight. The late Ruth Graham was asked if she ever thought about divorcing her husband, Billy Graham. Divorce? No. Murder? Yes. Without respect, we will end in either divorce or murder. I would like to leave you with a few thoughts on respect. First, respect carries many meanings. In one sense of the term, we should show respectful behavior to everyone, and that should rise out of our own character. Showing a little disrespect, I once wrote that if Robert Fulghum learned everything he ever needed to know about life in kindergarten, he either went to a heck of a kindergarten or he doesn't have much of a life. I am now eating my words because I found awfully good rules for community in a kindergarten lesson plan. These rules are taken from Popcorn Park Puppets. Treat other people the way you want to be treated. Be courteous and polite. Listen to what other people have to say. Don't insult people. Don't bully or pick on people. Don't judge people. Second, if we do come to the reluctant and painful conclusion that we cannot respect a person, it should be related to a pattern of breached integrity, not because we don't like his or her ideas. Third, even when we cannot respect a person's integrity or choices, we should still treat that person respectfully because, fourth, Christians must see every human being as created by Christ, made in the image of God. We need to respect that heritage and recognize that everyone is a candidate for Christ's redemption. Fifth, we should respect not only people, but positions. I think one of the reasons I have survived this long as a college president is because I hold such immense respect for professors and students. These positions represent commitments to learning that I love deeply. And on a personal note, I am very thankful to you that your respect for the office I hold has allowed me to be less formal than many of my presidential peers. Sixth, the cornerstones of respect in the Whitworth community should be our commitments to grace and truth. Respect rests on truth. We are more likely to respect a person for telling the truth we don't want to hear than for spinning the truth into something we do want to hear. But as I have said many times in this place and on this occasion, truth told without grace will weaken its impact. An angry or sarcastic presentation of the truth offers the perfect excuse to reject it. Grace, on the other hand, communicates respect. In John 4 and John 8, we find Jesus with women guilty of sexual immorality. By the way, absent from these stories were the guilty men who were equally at fault, but whose culture protected them while hanging the women out to dry. In both stories, Jesus showed a level of respect that startled those around him. In both stories, Jesus told the truth in love and respect. And in neither story did Jesus condemn the offender. Grace and truth build the bridges of respect. Not only will respect open people's ears and hearts to your ideas, respect will open you. Respect leaves the door open for new truth. Respect respirates your intellect. Respect will allow you to accept the possibility that those with whom you sharply disagree might be sources of truth. We have an amazing community on this campus. And if we are to be the best we can be, our big three won't be the big three. Our big three will be the shared values of respect, grace, and truth. This year may respect, grace, and truth be yours, both in giving and taking, as you enjoy the full blessings of Christ in the Whitworth community. Have a great year.